Welcome to Leading Lines, a podcast on educational technology from Vanderbilt University. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, director of the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching. I am very excited to share this interview. For this episode, I talked with Bahia Muhammad, assistant professor of sociology and anthropology at Howard University. She teaches courses as part of the National Inside Out Prison Exchange Program, courses in which half of her students are Howard students, and the other half are incarcerated individuals. Most Inside Out courses take place at prisons, but for logistical reasons, that was challenging for Bahia. She turned to a set of technologies to facilitate distance learning and to turn the course into a real learning community. I appreciate her passion for her work, but also her intentionality in using technology to create meaningful learning experiences for all of her students. Well, thanks, Bahia, for talking with me today. Can you first tell us a little bit kind of who you are, what you teach at Howard, that kind of thing?
Okay, I'm Bahia Muhammad. I'm an assistant professor of sociology in the criminology and sociology department at Howard University, and I teach basically all of the criminal justice classes, intro to criminal justice, juvenile delinquency, my specialization looking at a seminar on children of incarcerated parents, and then, of course, my Inside Out suite of classes, which include prisons Inside Out, juvie Inside Out, which is in a juvenile detention facility, as well as policing Inside Out, where I bring students together with law enforcement officers to engage in conversations across 15 weeks. So a lot of the courses that I teach are experiential in nature, so to speak, and then also have a heavy, heavy technology focus in terms of utilizing technology in order to implement the course from beginning to end.
Sure, sure. So I want to mostly talk to you about your Inside Out programs, but can you say a little bit about your Howard students who are taking these courses? What, why are they taking the courses? What career paths are they pursuing?
The Howard University students come from very diverse backgrounds as it relates to those individuals who are interested in taking the classes. I actually have Inside Out classes on the undergraduate and on the graduate level. So it's pretty interesting where you get a nice group of individuals. On the graduate level, these are typically students who are wanting to get their degrees in sociology, but specialize in criminology. Some of them go into research. Some of them are going into think tanks and some of them are going into academia in terms of wanting to be instructors as well. On the undergraduate level, it's pretty interesting because the sociology classes are a requirement across the board. And so you find that you have biology students that, you know, need this social science course as a requirement and are navigating in that way. It's also considered writing intensive. So we get students that are coming in and wanting to fill that second writing requirement. And so you're talking about students from the Howard Hospital, students from the law school, students from the School of Divinity, students from the School of Social Work, as well as the array of departments in the College of Arts and Sciences. And so we are seeing freshmen through senior year. Students are kind of coming from all over.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So quite a variety. Some of them may be sociology majors, but a lot of them coming from all over campus.
Yeah, the sociology majors are very interested in the course. And so we do find that a large percentage of them are coming in and either taking the policing side of it or the juvenile justice side or the adult prison side of it, which is pretty interesting.
Okay. All right. So that's helpful context. Now, tell me about the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program and how you got involved with it.
The Inside Out Prison Exchange Program was started in 1997 by a professor of the name of Lori Pompa at Temple University. She took her students on a tour to a correctional facility, and one of the incarcerated individuals by the name of Paul, you know, pulled her to the side like any of our students do when they're so excited about the conversation and in terms of motivating them and pushing them to think critically about issues that they may have not necessarily considered. And he asked her, you know, what are you guys going to talk about on the bus ride back? You know, have you considered having something like this where you guys are coming in across the span of a semester? And so that really resonated with Lori, and she created a full train the trainer model pitched it to the Soros Justice Foundation, received funding from all over, and lo and behold, 20 years later, you have an international program where students are going in and out of correctional facilities all around the world. I myself was trained in the program in 2007. At the time, I was a doctoral student at Rutgers University School of Criminal Justice. And one of my professors, my research professor, pulled me to the side and said, "Hey, you know, are you aware of this opportunity? It seems like this would be a perfect fit for you." And I had already had my eye on it. But for me, it was kind of unbelievable at the time. You know, how could you go inside of a prison and take a class across 15 weeks? You know, when I first read it, it's just like, this can't be true. This is just some information, you know, on the internet. And I started to look into it, filled out the application, ended up making it to the second round, did an interview with Lori herself, and was accepted into the cohort for 2007. And it changed my life ever since.
Wow. What are the goals of the program? And then how do you structure it? Because you talked about going into the prisons. Tell me a little bit about what that looks like in a typical Inside Out course.
A typical Inside Out course is an opportunity to engage in a conversation. It allows for you to teach your class in the same way that you would on campus, except the location is different. So you're going inside of a correctional facility. The composition of the class, though, is a bit different than what you would see on the college campus, where half of the students are incarcerated. So about 10 to 15 students incarcerated at whatever facility, and then 10 to 15 students at a university. And so at Howard, 15 incarcerated individuals, 15 Howard University students are going into this class to engage in whatever the topical area is. So, for example, when I went in and taught criminology for 15 weeks as one, we are all talking about criminological theories and the history of incarceration and prison systems and things of that sort. And so it really is not about research. It's not about social advocacy. It's not about, you know, changing the criminal justice system. It really is about critical education. But you find that when you go in, major transformations happen in the sense of being able to humanize both populations, so to speak.
Yeah. Can you say a little bit more about that? What, like in the criminology course, what do the Howard students gain by participating in this version of a criminology course? And then what do the incarcerated students gain by participating in this experience?
The incarcerated students, who are considered the inside students, they benefit in various ways as well. For example, some of the individuals who participate have college credit already. And so those individuals become motivated and inspired during reentry to apply to colleges and universities upon release and go back. And some of them actually take additional programs within the institutions, for example, at American University or Georgetown or the University of the District of Columbia, which also offer classes at the institution. So it kind of opens them up in a way to say, wow, you know, I want to take more classes in the same way that it does for the students at the university. Some individuals take it and they just are empowered by the knowledge and the theories and gaining a better understanding of the criminal justice system that they're involved in. Some of the incarcerated students have no idea about these theories that talk about why individuals who live in socially disorganized communities are faced with certain hardships, what strain means, and as it relates to the American dream, which is a huge theory in criminology, or the middle class measuring rod. So there are opportunities for them to rethink about their lives and their experiences within the framework of a theory. And ultimately, they go back and have conversations with their children and families to then inspire them to go to school, even if themselves are not interested during release to go into an actual education program. So those are some of the things, some of the ways in which the inside students have been inspired as well.
That's pretty amazing, actually, the way that both groups of students gain value from this experience. I want to talk a little bit about how you facilitate these types of interactions. This is a technology podcast, so I'm interested in hearing about some of the technologies that you use to help facilitate this type of, it's a very unique learning community.
So that's a great question. The Inside Out classes, although they've been around for 20 years, I am one of the only instructors that utilizes technology. And, you know, I'll tell you why. When you talk about transformation, it's kind of like, you know, we have to be in person. That transformation can only happen inside of a correctional facility when it's human individuals interacting with one another in a classroom. But if you know technology like we do, that's not necessarily the case. You could actually bridge barriers and build relationships and humanize in ways that you may not necessarily be able to do in terms of human interaction. So for my class, it really was one of the first times ever that Inside Out utilized technology. And what I wanted to do was to create an opportunity for those students who may have been very nervous about entering a correctional facility. An individual who said, you know, I'm not signing up for this class because I totally have no idea what I'm signing up for. Really to kind of use technology to be a buffer between the students and the correctional institutions to kind of be kind of that liaison or a bridge that they could go step by step until they felt comfortable with going in. So some of the technologies that I used, GoToMeeting, we kind of had meetings between the incarcerated students and the Howard University students using technology. The semester that I launched the technology, I was, you know, faced with this issue. And the issue was the Bureau of Prisons that agreed to partner with me for this amazing opportunity was in West Virginia. I mean, how do you get students?
And you're in D.C., so that's like two states over.
That's two states over. You're talking about a six-hour round-trip ride. You're talking about gobs of funding, which I did not have, you know, at the time. And then 15 students on the inside and outside who are so excited about making this happen. And that's where technology came to save us all. It was a cheaper option. It allowed me to have a captive audience in West Virginia sitting inside of a room in front of a camera. And then also students at a university sitting in a classroom in front of a camera. So the GoToMeeting really allowed us to kind of have a meeting where I used it to merge the students who were incarcerated with the Howard students in real time, kind of like Skyping in and having a group dialogue using technology. And I specifically used that just to combine the students. And then I also utilized that for my office hours. 2 days a week for an hour, who's going to jump in a car and drive 3 hours just, you know, for office hours. Although my inside students are totally worth it, we could definitely save a lot of money and utilize technology for what it's best at doing, connecting people in real time. I also utilize the Blackboard system. So, of course, I put all of the readings online. I allow the students to be able to do virtual tours online between different facilities. So if they were nervous about going into a correctional institution, they could actually have the opportunity to do that online prior to ever walking in. So they could see what the entrance of a facility looked like without ever stepping foot in. They could engage with correctional officers using, you know, virtual technology in order to understand what that experience was like. They could actually see the inside of a cell, and you can engage with incarcerated individuals totally using virtual technology. And so I put a lot of links on Blackboard and allowed for the students to be able to see the realities of what they would be faced with in the class. We also use Skype, and that typically was for office hours with students at Howard and then also with the students in the correctional institution. The students at Howard, believe it or not, after a class, sometimes were, you know, very emotional over things that we talked about, you know, opened up inside of them. And it allowed them to be able to say, you know, Wednesdays for, you know, between 9 a.m. and 5 o'clock, they could just send me a direct message via Skype, and then we could schedule a meeting within the next 15 minutes. Sometimes students were on the phone in tears, really wanting to walk through some of the things that we talked about inside of the institution. That could never happen in a regular classroom outside of technology. You would have to wait until the office hours or the following Wednesday. And so that was great. The last technology that we used was GroupMe. So the students actually created a GroupMe account for the class, and it allowed me to communicate with them. But also, I was kind of silent in that group, and so it allowed me to also be a participant observer. I got to hear about the students going back and forth, texting one another, saying, oh my God, today's lecture was X, Y, and Z. And it was like I was invisible in the class. And really, the only time I posted on there was to say, the facility is on a lockdown. Please don't go and jump on the metro. Don't come in for this day. We'll follow up the next Tuesday. And so the students, if you could see their phone, they actually had one area on the phone where all of the apps on that particular window were specifically for the class. So they had the Metro app up there so that they could see if there were any delays. They had their Uber app up there so that they would be able to tap the Uber pool and be able to go with a group of three students. They had the Blackboard app there so that anytime I sent a message or an emergency, they would get it through Blackboard. They would get it to GroupMe. And it really was really cool. I mean, to engage with students in terms of technology, and it was great for them. The students are amazing when it comes to utilizing technology and having like 20 windows open at one time and engaging in conversations where they're tweeting and they're on Facebook, but they're also in a class. And I mean, it allowed them to grow in terms of their love for technology, but it also allowed me to be this like amazing instructor where I got to hear the ins and outs of what students were going through. So technology in the class has, you know, opened me and inspired me in ways that you wouldn't imagine that it could actually do.
I have a few follow-ups because the cluster of technologies that you used is really fascinating, and I'm kind of also imagining. I actually visited DC last summer with my two daughters, and so you know we're standing and we're just being tourists, right? We're just having fun and going to museums, but yeah, like my phone was this like toolkit that I kept with me, and if I needed an Uber, if I needed a map, if I needed to know times or phone numbers, you know, like so. Because I think in our daily lives, we often use technology in that ways where it gives us tools to solve problems that we want to solve, right? And I think sometimes in education, we think of this technology as something new and foreign and different, right? And that somehow it's going to change how we do what we do. But in our daily lives, we just pick up tools and use them more often than not. Yeah. So let me ask about, so first the GoToMeeting. So during class, both sets of students would get to see each other through the video conferencing, right? Yeah. Were you able to have class discussion through that interface? Like, could the students kind of talk to each other in a way that felt a little authentic?
Yes and no.
Okay.
The yes, because we structured it in a way where the night before we did the GoToMeeting, I would send out a sheet of paper. And on that sheet of paper, it would say step one through step five. So I really operationalized exactly how every minute of the conversation would go. They knew that this was kind of the outline for what the lecture was going to look like. So sure. There weren't individuals talking over one another. It was, you know, kind of structured in a way. It seemed organic, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, that organic. When we got to the sections where we broke into small groups, we also utilized the phone. You know, we did the old school conference calling where there's a phone in the middle of the room. Individuals are on the speaker. There are, you know, four eager students leaning in on the phone on our side where I could see. And then on the side of the correctional facility, the warden would create the same spaces there. So it would be four women there. And it would kind of be a calling kind of conversation. And I created it in a way that you could use technology in the same ways that individuals are incarcerated can only communicate. So we know that when you're incarcerated, you only have mail. You have calls and you have visits. And so the calls were the opportunity to utilize that. And in the federal system, they're also able to use technology in that way here and there, but they have to pay for it. So it's not as often. So we mirrored it in that way. Once we got into about class three, the students knew already, you know, we check in, how are you doing today? And they would kind of listen to everyone talk. When they jumped into the going from inside to outside student, they were very respectful about waiting until someone completely finished their sentence. That was where harmony started coming in. It was kind of like we had to kind of hone in with technology and submit to it in a way that allowed it to really work best for us. And that meant that we just needed a lot more structure than what you would have in a classroom where individuals are like talking over one another or, you know, jumping in or holding their hand up for like 3 hours, where this way you critically think about what you want to say the night before. If someone says something, you're like taking notes and writing it down. And when your turn comes, you're sharing that. At the end of the GroupMe sessions, the part that I really liked the most was an opportunity for individuals to open share. So really, there was this opportunity for a Howard student to jump in and say, hey, this is kind of what I'm feeling about it, and then an incarcerated student. And we would do that for about, I want to say like 20 to 25 minutes, and it worked. Anything beyond that, absolutely not. After 25 minutes, it's like with any class. It's like, okay, we're going to take a short break. So in those instances, it's kind of like a yes and a no.
It sounds like the students got to have really meaningful interchanges with each other, but there was a level of structure and intentionality that you might not need if everyone was in the same room. You might be able to kind of use social cues and body language to kind of navigate some of that.
Absolutely. You would be able to see a hand go up. You're right. Able to see somebody like shifting, you know, back and forth in their seat. And in the end, when we had kind of what I called the open mic, I call it an open mic. And what they were able to do was to say, you know, oh, I just, you know, I'm so heated over this. And so you could get that emotion out. But there was a time and space for it where in a regular classroom, you know, you could just say kind of whatever. And even if it dovetails the conversation in a way that it's not necessarily supposed to go, it's that way. But you find with technology, I got through all of my lecture information because it's like everyone has a place in terms of speaking about what's going on. And it meant that it was a lot easier for me to stay on topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you also mentioned the virtual tours. Did you create those? Did you find those? Where did those come from? And then what role did they play in preparing students for their actual visits?
Google went in and actually just sat down for like 3 hours one day and just looked up virtual tours for like Connecticut and New York. And I went through each and every one of them and really took my time and kind of took notes. And some were better than others, in my opinion, as it related to things that I've done. And so I just put maybe 5 or 6 up there and then also said to the students, hey, if you want an extra credit point, identify, you know, maybe one in your town or in your state where you're from. And so now I have a whole, you know, folder full of like virtual tours and students talking about, you know, what it was like to see this facility in Arizona compared to a facility in Mexico. You know, really a great opportunity. What I've decided to do now, where I've kind of become this technology guru on the campus, is create my own. So I have a videographer now and a partnership with the Department of Corrections, and really having the cameras roll and follow me and saying, you know, this is the way that you will enter into this facility. You'll have to make sure that you go through these lockers and, you know, really creating it so that I could totally put the class almost all the way online in the beginning.
So your students, since you were working with a partner in West Virginia, they weren't able to visit regularly, but it sounds like they would visit occasionally. So you still had some of that in-person experience?
Yes. What I wanted to do was we did have a couple of grant funds that we pulled in. So if you're using GoToMeeting and, you know, each bus ride was $3,000, multiply that by 15 weeks, you could do the math there. It goes to zero with GoToMeeting. So it really allowed me to be able to be a little bit more creative. And what I decided to do was I looked at the research. And the research around mass incarceration identified that 70% of the individuals who are incarcerated don't get visits. So that means that you're not going every week. So really the Howard students were very privileged. And when you think about an inside-out class, those students who are in these universities have more access to incarcerated individuals than their own families. than their own family members just by virtue of the privilege of going to a university or college. I wanted students to understand that. So I didn't want to bring them every single week and show this kind of superficial relationship. Although it would have been great for the class and bonding, it's unrealistic in terms of how to help the population that's dealing with it. And so they went once a month, and it was so interesting because as they read the literature, they're just like, one of the grandmothers in the literature, you know, gave up on visiting because it just became too expensive. And the students were just like, oh, my God, I feel the same way. You know, it's such a long ride and you have to prepare yourself in advance. And I'm just like, remember the article we read? What about that parent? And how can we create a program or some sort of a service to alleviate that so that we could bridge the bonds between those who are incarcerated and their family? So it was really realistic where once a month they were able, out of the four classes they would have, three of them would be using technology in various ways over the phone or GroupMe and Skyping in. And then that one day we would meet at like 6 a.m. at Crampton Hall outside of main campus. We would all board a bus and we would go to have a session with the women face to face. You would not believe the bonding in terms of like bridging and building relationships is just like, you know, when you have your BFF, you know, on your social media. And it's kind of like when you finally get to meet, you're like, oh, my God, I've been following you all this time. It feels like you're more connected than you really are. And that actually happened. And it allowed for the conversations in person, literally to be, there were no bars. Like there was nothing that held them back. They shared any and everything. It built trust in a way a lot quickly than it would in your typical inside out class where they're waiting to hear what you're talking about. And, you know, they're looking at what you're wearing and how you're dressing. And when you're over the phone and having a group conversation and then you're Skyping in or you're texting in through GroupMe, you have no idea what I look like. There's no stigmatizing me as it goes to what I look like. You may not even know. You may know my gender from my voice, but you have no idea what my race is. And so it built barriers and, you know, ripped down walls in ways that was just like, I wasn't sure why the Inside Out model was just like, are you sure you're going to be able to get that transformative effect? And it's right. Just like, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I know when I'm working with my colleagues at, you know, multi-institution research projects or something, what I've learned is often the group works better if you meet face-to-face first, you know, at a conference or a gathering, and then you go off and go online and you get the work done, right? But it sounds like in your case, it was just the opposite. It was the online interactions that prepared students on both sides for a more meaningful face-to-face encounter when it finally did come.
Yeah, students are, I mean, think about it. You know, you're going to go into a supermax facility. Look at the way they project things on the media. The students are just, so the first couple of classes, they're like sitting and looking around. You don't know how to take it in. But over the phone, you're just having a conversation. And if someone knows how to engage in, you know, this sort of conversation, like, oh, wow, this is, when you go into the facility, it's just like, wow, this is a facility. But then you hear that familiar voice that you spoke to for three hours over the phone, the way we use technology now, that is like ridiculous.
Who does that?
Who does that anymore, you know? And so it really created the classroom space that you want, you know, and it was economical in the end.
Sure. Now you mentioned the Blackboard and the GroupMe, right? These kind of virtual spaces where students could connect with each other. Were the inside students part of those spaces as well? Did they have the kind of technology access to interact with the outside students through texting, through GroupMe, or things like that?
No. One of the requirements of the Inside Out program is that you maintain semi-anonymity. And so you only use a first name basis. You can't exchange any kind of any contact information. And that's for the safety on, you know, both sides. So correctional institutions, when they let us come in, it's like, this is educational, period, and you're not building any of those kind of like relationships. So the way that we worked around that was that the GroupMe was solely for the students at Howard University. And then on the side for the correctional institution, they created a network where the educational department would take sheets of paper from any of the incarcerated individuals throughout the week for things that they, so that was their way of kind of texting, so to speak. They would write it down, give it in, and in real time, they would scan it over as a PDF to me, and then I would be able to send the message back. So it took more work on their end in order to do that. And then the students who were incarcerated actually added me to their internet email interface. So they're able to engage in three or four emails or so out of the week, depending on how much money they have on their commissary. And so as an instructor, I was able to kind of go back and forth. So I served as the liaison between the technologies kind of used on the campus with the students and then created that feedback to them. So I would always give kind of the updates on a weekly basis to say, hey, one of the conversations in the group me that continues to go on is, you know, they want to know why these particular policies in an institution have been around for so long and aren't changing. And so when we would come back together, it was like everyone was on the same page, although they didn't all use the same technologies. And now what you're starting to see at the institution that I'm in now, the DC jail, what I'm really excited about is they have tablets. And so it allows for the incarcerated students to send me direct messages as an instructor and I can respond. You can have an app up there that allows just, you know, for classroom kind of conversation and dialogue. I could upload all of the readings. I mean, amazing technologies that they're using now. And so I'm so excited about the future of where this can actually go.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. So many, it sounds like more options, right? More options for connection, for interaction. That's really great. What advice would you give to a faculty member who's interested in getting involved with Inside Out?
Go to the website and look up the program and see when the next training is. Sign up whenever you can, regardless of if you know how you're going to use it. You know, like you may not even see yourself as a biologist going into a facility and teaching biology. But go and allow it to open up your mind. You really will be surprised. And at the end of the training, you kind of utilize that time to be able to create your own syllabus, so to speak. It allows you to get the 15-week curriculum so you could see exactly how it works. And then the one of the most amazing parts is you go into a correctional facility 3 days out of the 5 days, and you engage with incarcerated individuals in the same way that you would for a class you teach. So even if you never teach a class, I mean, I was trained in 2007. I didn't get the first class up and running until about 2013. It took a while to kind of get it going and for me to be teaching it on my own. I still learned so much, and it really helped me as it relates to this phenomenon of mass incarceration in the United States. And so I would say that the first step would be to check out the website. I mean, they have podcasts that they do that are absolutely amazing with incarcerated individuals, formerly incarcerated individuals, instructors. They have a list of all of the correctional facilities across the world that they're partnering with. They have the instructors who are up and leaving quotes and talking about it. I mean, you could spend a nice amount of time just on the website. I think that would be, you know, the best start. And then to ultimately reach out, you know, to someone in your state that has a program up and running and have coffee, you know, Skype with them and talk to them on how you may partner or how you may, you know, bring something like this to your university. And then thirdly, I would say show an Inside Out video, you know, and talk with it in one of your classes and see the excitement and the interest as it relates to the students. That's always something that's motivating.
Yeah. I want to come back to the technology for a second because it seems like you've approached your Inside Out courses very differently because of your technology use. Has that changed how you teach some of your more traditional courses at Howard?
Absolutely. Since I've done this class, it's so interesting that I've flipped literally 10 of my classes to date. So I literally like beefed up the online components to the point where just this summer I taught a corrections class online. And when I read the reviews, I was like blown away. The students were just like, you know, I thought this was going to be a summer session. I wasn't going to get the Dr. Muhammad experience. And it was amazing. They're like, we did a tour online. I had no idea that there were virtual tours. And they're like, you know, I really read all of the information. So I upload like amazing videos and, you know, interviews from TED Talks that really dig at the hearts of the students. And then, you know, I also allowed the students to introduce themselves to one another, create really cool videos that they post. And I mean, the online experience is almost mirroring what would happen in the classroom. And I love that I've been able to kind of do that. And so it's really forcing me and also now I'm speaking to colleagues in my department to say, hey, you guys should sign up for HU Teach, which gives you, you know, $3,000, you know, stipend, which is not, you know, a crazy amount, but in the summer to help you flip your classroom. And so 30% you can flip, 60%, 100. I started at 30 and now I'm at 100% flipping like every class. And it frees up so much space for writing. I'm just like, this is amazing. I'm working on a book now and, you know, a couple of chapters. And then it keeps you hip, you know, it keeps you for yourself. I feel like it keeps me healthy and, you know, excited and really quick. You know, when things are posted or students have issues, I could address it in real time. And it gives me more time later on because it doesn't become an office hour visit for a 2-hour conversation that could have been a 1-second text.
Sure. Yeah. We have a question we ask all of our guests. We focus a lot on the podcast about digital educational technology. We've mentioned a lot here today in our conversation. What's one of your favorite analog educational technologies?
That is such a good question. I would say, I don't know if this would count, but the voice diaries that are on the iPhone. I've been doing digital diaries. And so the students are able to pull up their iPhone, click the app for the voice diaries, and in real time, say the date, say the time, the topic of the class, and go on. I've been getting students, when I transcribe what they send back to me, it's like 7 to 10 pages. It's hard to get them to even write a page sometimes in terms of, even when it's a self-reflection. And so they're going on and on. So it's kind of like, that technology, they pull it up even without Wi-Fi, even without anything. They're storing kind of this digital diary that I can then put into my research, my pedagogy. But then they also, when they graduate, can go back and say, oh, my God, in 2015, I was crying every day after that. I've become so strong, you know, as it relates to these issues. So I would, you know, definitely say the voice diaries, some of those.
Yeah. I would call that digital, but I will accept your answer because it was so great.
Okay. What are some of yours?
Well, honestly, I think you answered the question earlier when you mentioned the phone. And, you know, I mean, technically it may be, you know, some voice over IP digital kind of thing, but it's a very analog technology, right? We've had conference call capability before we had an internet, right? And so that analog piece and the community that it facilitates over, you know, around something as simple as a phone call.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that because one of the things that the incarcerated students, the inside students talked about was how using the phone in an educational way, changed the way they communicated with their children. So they started like sending the readings home to kids, you know, and typically they would have like these conversations. It's like, you know, what happened this week? What is your mom doing? You know, who is she dating now? It's more of, you know, looking at the child and the child kind of being an informant. So there were no educational components where they started to ask and mirror exactly how the worksheet conversation went outside of the class. And so the warden mentioned to me, because, you know, in correctional facilities, they have to record every call. She mentioned how the dynamics of the conversation over the phone completely changed. They're talking about college and, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they did check-ins when they first got on the phone. So it wasn't like they just jumped in not being able to talk to one another for a whole week. It was like they had patience with themselves in the same way they did with the class. They asked about, you know, what is your homework like and what are you doing? And the conversation was more double-sided than one-sided, so the kids could talk and you can hear from them, and then they would go to the parents. I was just like, wow, you know. And then also, it's interesting also that the Howard University students were just like, I got to call my mom. You know, like, I need to call my grandma. You know, like, they don't have the apps, and they don't, and they're like, I need to be on the phone. And there was a way where they were able to kind of like blur everything out. And they're like on these phones for dear life. And it's like you're trying to hear. There was no dropping a call. You know, it's as long as you have it plugged into the jack, it's going to be there. And it reminded me of when I was growing up and, you know, you're on the phone with your friends and you're just so excited. And there was no technology. Things were real. You know, you had to, there was no fuzziness to say, hey, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you, you know, it was none of that. And it's interesting because you don't even think of that. Like, I don't even think in that way anymore. It's like I think in a technology kind of way. But if I go back to it, I definitely know that the incarcerated students would say that for them, it would have been the phone. And for the students at Howard, they went back to some of those old school traditions and actually sometimes picked up the phone and said, hey, mom, you know, thank you for this and thank you for that. And it's amazing how they had like 3-hour conversations without a drop call.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you, Bahia. This has been really rich. I've really enjoyed this conversation today and hearing about all the ways that this program of yours works and how you use technology and the impact that it has on your students. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you so much.
That was Bahia Muhammad, Assistant Professor of Sociology and Anthropology at Howard University. I really enjoyed my conversation with her, and I hope you did too. Bahia's stories about how course-related telephone calls affected both sets of her students was inspiring, and it reminds me of the impact our educational choices can have on our students' lives outside the classroom. For more on Bahia Muhammad and the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program, follow the links in our show notes. You'll find those show notes on our website, leadinglinespod.com, where you'll also find past Leading Lines episodes with full transcripts. We're on Twitter and Facebook, too. Just search for Leading Lines Podcast. And if you have a moment to leave us a rating and review on iTunes, that would be great. That helps other people find the podcast. Leading Lines is produced by the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching, the Vanderbilt Institute for Digital Learning, the Office of Scholarly Communications at the Vanderbilt Libraries, and the Associate Provost for Education Development and Technologies. This episode was edited by Rhett McDaniel. Look for new episodes the first and third Monday of each month. I'm your host, Derek Brough. Thanks for listening.